Welcome to the Princeton Laxcast. I'm Jerry Price. I'm here with Princeton head coach Matt Matalon. Coach, welcome.
Happy to be back.
We were just talking about the other podcast, the Court Report, and the women's basketball team on the road at the NCAA tournament. They'll take on Maryland at 12:30 Friday afternoon, and the men's hockey team is on its way to Lake Placid for they'll play Friday as well against Cornell in the ECAC semifinals. And one of the things about Princeton is that I like a lot is the way all of the coaches are engaged with all the other coaches and the successes that their teams have. And I know that you're pretty happy for those two teams.
Yeah, Coach Banghart and Coach Fogarty are doing an awesome job with their programs. I mean, Coach Fogarty's – see what year is he in now? It's third?
Fourth.
So he's got a line playing together arguably, I mean, he's got two record-breaking goal scorers.
One of them leads the country in goals and one leads in assists.
Yeah, he's got the best power play. Does he still have the top power play in the country? I mean, so he's got incredible chemistry. He's got a couple guys that have been playing together for 3 years, which is awesome to see in terms of the growth of that program. And then, you know, Coach Banghart and our women's hoops team, they're awesome. They ran through the Ivy League. You know, we're fired up. Hopefully, you know, they get a good matchup with Maryland and, you know, we can make some things happen.
She said that you want to be the 12th seed if you want to win two games. That you want to be if your goal is to win one game, you want to be seeded as high as you can, 8, 9, whatever. But if your goal is to get two, you want to be the 12. So you have to play the 4 and the 5 as opposed to playing the 8 and the 1. Or
it's awesome. Yeah, I mean, yeah. She's dialed, you know, and she's got a great group. We're fired up for her. We're ready to watch.
So the Ivy basketball tournament last weekend, home court was a big topic of conversation, and got me thinking about lacrosse and home field in lacrosse. How big a deal is home field in lacrosse?
You know, I think it's a, you know, in terms of regular season games, it's funny. We go through years where, you know, last year we were a team that, you know, I thought played great on the road, you know. Whereas this year we're still trying to figure ourselves out. I don't think we play necessarily better one or the other, but I think as it comes to tournament time, and specifically an Ivy League tournament or a conference tournament, I think it's a really big deal. I mean, to be able to win the regular season and earn yourself a chance to stay at home, I think what that does is it just ups your comfort level, your ability to be in your locker room, you know, your pregame meal, your routines. So I think there's a huge sense of comfort in that. I mean, I'm really excited this year for the Ivy League in a neutral site. I'm excited to see, you know, how well we can promote it. You know, how many fans will be there. I'm just excited. I'm excited for the whole experience. I really do hope it does well.
That's sort of the next question. So the basketball tournament, the big question is, should it be played in the Palestra or not? And how big an advantage is that for Penn? There's no comparable thing for basketball, though, because Columbia is an Ivy League venue without a men's lacrosse team. And I think in a lot of ways, like, you know, a lot of people ask me what I thought about that. And I think, you know, when you're throwing together the tournament at the last minute because you didn't know where it was going to be, there's logistical issues that go with that. But the idea of having Columbia's facility, which I think is actually, I don't know if you've ever been to their football stadium. But
no, I've seen it, yep.
I think it's a really good lacrosse venue. And it's New York City where all 8 Ivy schools, all 7 men's schools have a lot of alums. So you figure maybe you can get some fans out there.
I mean, look, the contingency of alums in Manhattan, specifically ours, and like you said, all Ivies, I hope to draw well. I hope that at that time of the year we get a beautiful weekend. It's got a track around the field, you know, which in my opinion is it's not a true lacrosse field if it's got a track around it.
But it's a good size stadium.
It's the right size stadium. It's the right size, you know, it holds the right amount of people. And in terms of location, it's location, location, location. You can't get any better. I hope they do a one. I hope it really works out. I love the idea of a neutral site. If Columbia were home to the men's lacrosse tournament for the next 25 years, I think everyone would be able to get around that. If it went back to, you know, earning yourself the right to play at home, I think that matters too. So
the women's tournament still is at the number one seed, correct?
I believe so. Yes, it is.
So it'd be interesting to see what comes of this tournament this year. And, this is the first weekend of Ivy League regular season games as we start to go down the path of figuring out who the 4 teams who are going to be in the tournament are and some really big games. But first, I'm going to give you a trivia question.
Right now,
who leads Division I men's lacrosse in assists per game?
Would have to be, you know, our 22, Michael Sowers.
But who leads in goals per game?
Goals per game.
This is a good one.
I mean,
you're not going to get it.
I'm going to say Connor Fields, but, you know, it's
a MIDI.
It's a MIDI. I know exactly who it is. It is home of Greg Price.
It is.
And it is the Tutton kid from Sacred
Tuttle.
Heart.
Tuttle. Max Tuttle from Sacred Heart.
I actually haven't seen much tape on him, but we were actually talking about in the office the other day. I'm going to watch a game or two when I get a free minute just to see how, you know,
he's
how good this young guy is.
He's good. He's but he's a MIDI who leads Division I in goals per game. That's saying a lot.
You're spot on. I mean, that's good production.
He's a good shooter. He puts a lot on it. He's very good at creating his own shot. He's the kind of guy that, you know, a school like Sacred Heart, you know, he's from Colorado, so it's not like nobody knew who he was. But he's the kind of guy who, you know, when you're on the Northeast Conference level, you know, those are the game-changing guys that you have to get.
And, absolutely.
You know, they have a huge game this week. They're at Robert Morris. So it's Robert Morris Sacred Heart for the NEC opener for both. And Robert Morris is ranked. They have one of the top offenses in the country. Could be a lot of goals in that game.
Oh, they just stomped Marquette 12-2. I mean, that's going to be anytime you can hold a Marquette team and an Amplo team to two goals and the ability to put 12 on them, that's impressive. They should be rolling. I think they're pretty senior laden. A lot of Canadians.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the game here. So Princeton and Penn, the last 2 years, Penn has outscored Princeton by 28-27, and that's very misleading because neither game was very close. The game 2 years ago was 20-10 Penn. The game last year was 17-8 Princeton. Both games were 5-1 at the end of the first quarter, so you know and weren't really close after that. Neither one of them. So does any of that carry over? I mean, you know, 2 years ago, the two leading scorers for Penn this year, McGeary and Mathias, had 5 goals each in that game. 2 years ago, Sowers last year had a 9-point game against Penn. Is there anything that you take from those two games? Or are they anomalies, the blowouts?
I don't know. I mean, no, in terms of score-wise, no. I mean, look, 2 years ago, our pick play was atrocious. We didn't play well down there. They switched us every time.
No, it was here. The game
that was
here.
Absolutely. Yep. 2 years
so
ago.
So again,
here.
Going back to the home field thing, the blowouts were on the other team's field.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't look too much into that. I can say that I do not anticipate one way or the other this game turning out like that. I'd imagine most Ivy League games should be around 1 or 2 goal games. I mean, it's just a very competitive atmosphere. Penn's an extremely well-coached program. Coach Murphy does an outstanding job over there. So, no, I mean, look, they're both of us have been tested early. But in terms of the carryover from last year or 2 years ago, no, I think we played one of our better games of the season last year. I think we played our best defensive game last year in terms of one-on-one defense, slide decisions, instinctual decisions against Penn last year. And I think our offense was clicking. It'll be, you know, I don't take any carryover.
Sort of a similar kind of team in some ways to Rutgers. I think Penn is with the, you know, sort of a defensive mentality. They don't give up a lot of goals. They don't, you know, they're averaging and allowing basically 8.5 goals per game. Some good results. They have the win over Duke. Last week, Villanova, who's ranked 5th, they lost that game, but it was 6-0 Villanova at halftime. They came back, made it 8-6. So clearly a good Penn team. And some really, really good players, you know, besides just McGeary and Mathias. They have Keating. The pole, I think, is tremendous. And, you know, that's a lot of challenges there.
Sure. I mean,
and veteran guys.
You know, it is a very good team. And it's a team that's also done very well in the second half of some games, you know, and that's a credit to their coaching staff and making good adjustments and coming out and rebounding. I think they were down 9-2 against Maryland and closed the gap on them. And they were down 6-0 against Villanova. So they've done a really nice job. You know, you said it, Mathias, McGreary, Dunn on offense, Keating. I mean, we'll treat him as if he carries the ball over the midline. We'll treat him like we're defending Austin Sims.
He can shoot with anybody.
Yeah, he should be a first-round MLL draft pick just because of the offensive prowess of LSMs in the league. So, you know,
I saw that kid play a club game, and it was at Cabrini, Irina Cabrini.
Of course, yeah.
So the field there, that's like
set back in the woods. It's nice.
And there's like there's the goal, and then there's the fence, and then there's the building behind it. And I mean, he came across midfield and he let one go, and it just missed the top of the goal. And there was no fence behind there, and it went over the top of the goal, not by a lot, and it slammed off the building that was like, I don't know, like across the sidewalk, across the, you know, whatever.
Our goal would be to let him not shoot the ball. I think that, you know, look, goalies don't.
And have you seen too many Poles who shoot harder than he does?
No. I mean, I also haven't seen that many Poles that take as many shots as he does. I think that the reason why.
I've always kind of considered him to be maybe the most underrated player in the country.
Sure. I mean, they could. And look, you know, it goes to the All-American gripes that we've had over the past couple of years. You have to play in the NCAA tournament because true All-Americans will help get your team there. Now, when it comes down to it, look, overrated. I mean, everyone knows about him. He's a really good player. But, you know, I think the strength in Poles shooting the ball is that goaltenders just don't practice seeing shots from Poles a lot. So it makes you second guess at times. But we're hoping to not let him shoot the ball.
So let's go back to last Saturday against Rutgers, a 15-14 overtime win. A lot of really good signs from that game and some you know, things that clearly need improvement. But some of the good signs, one is, you know, right off the bat, coming from 14-10 down, not giving up and scoring the last five goals of the game, being down 14-10 with 9 minutes to go, you know, being down 14-10 with 9 minutes to go, what are you thinking at that point?
You know, I'll start by saying to all the Tiger faithful out there, I appreciate the notes and the kind words. You know, it was a very gutty win, you know, and it was a very good win for our team emotionally. Down 14-10, I was pissed. You know, we weren't playing well. You know, we were making mistakes again in the clearing game. We were making mistakes on the defensive end in terms of slide decisions. You know, we weren't playing well in the goal. So, you know, not happy. And, you know, when talking to our guys, it was a message that was no different from the beginning of the game or at halftime or whatever it may be. You know, we have to take care of our execution and the details. And, you know, as soon as they decided to start doing that, we were able to chip away and get back in this game.
And then, you know, the obvious is Austin Sims. You know, he's been struggling shooting, and then all of a sudden he became Austin Sims again, put up five goals, tied it with 49 seconds left, won it in overtime with, you know, one left-handed shot, one right-handed shot, neither one of them savable, you know, typical Austin Sims that people are used to seeing.
These are young guys, and young guys get in slumps, and they don't shoot well, and they may not play well every day, and we're so used to seeing the wonderful side of Austin Sims that can score from anywhere at any time, and the young guy struggled, just hitting the cage, locating his shots early, you know, and we looked at him before the game and we were kind of all laughing and we're like, hey, you better keep shooting, you know, like
right.
We're expecting you to, you know, we're expecting you to put 5 or 10 in today. So, you know, when you get your opportunities, and Coach March did a really nice job of putting him in positions to help him break out of his slump, per se, if you call it a slump. So, look, we're really happy. That's the Austin we're accustomed to. He does it every day in practice. He probably shoulders a little more pressure than the young guy needs to. We just need him to go out and keep doing his job. And look, he's got an incredible weapon. He's one of the best set shooters in the game, you know. And then on the last overtime goal, it was a really savvy play. If you're able to go back and watch that play, Riley sets a nice pick on him. You know, Riley Thompson, our other captain, who normally garners a short stick. So he goes, sets a nice pick. They get a matchup. We get a matchup, and Austin takes advantage of it. Quick little stutter, gets to the middle of the field, increases angle, and I believe he put his lefty shot short side. So just a really nice play. I mean, I was really happy for Austin. I think that'll give him a lot of confidence, but he wasn't a guy that was, you know, wearing his slump on his shoulders. He was just saying,
oh, no,
you know,
he was, I'm going to shoot my way out of it, which is what you want to see.
Well, yeah, and look, we, in a
there's
time
no, there's
like
no
that.
There's no bad shot for him.
No, and we try to keep it light. You know, we were joking with him as, you know, we talked about it a little bit with him and, you know, poked some fun at him. But at the same time, we're like, Austin, we want you to keep shooting. We believe in you, and there's no other way to go about it. And look, he's such a good kid, and, you know, I actually – we were rewatching his post game interview the other day, and he, you know, he says so many right things. So we're really impressed with him, and we're happy that he got out of it. And you know, he shouldered it. We needed someone to step up and put the ball in the back of the net, and he did so on our extra man, and he did so in 6-on-6. So really thrilled for him.
And your other captain, Sam Bonifiti, 19-for-33 facing off. Very good sign for him against Rutgers. And
look, going into that game, we looked.
Before you talk about, and then the wing play was great, and Andrew Song had had 8 ground balls in the game, and 6 of them were on faceoffs.
Yeah, those are difference-making plays and players. I mean, we double pulled up on the wing. It was, you know, it was a good coaching decision by our whole staff, and you know, we just put guys where if we could create a ground ball and those guys could pick up balls. I mean, look, there is no coaching decision in Andrew Song hockeying the ball around
that was a great
12 times and then picking it up. That is a player being a player. So those guys did wonderful up there. We're really happy for them. Sam, we looked at Sam before the game, and as a senior captain, we needed him to wear the weight of the world on his shoulders and dig us out of that hole we're in at the faceoff X, and he did just that. So hopefully he can build on this week.
And then so the goalie situation, you pulled Tyler Blaisdell in the third quarter. John Levine went in and made some great saves. But then you went back to Tyler to start the fourth quarter, and then he makes the big save in overtime. And that's a one-on-one right in front with a guy who knows how to finish from Rutgers. And he turned that one aside and had the wherewithal to go get the ball, too, after that. And
look, Tyler's our starting goalie. He's been our starting goalie. He's going to continue to be our starting goalie. He's a very talented guy. Again, it's just, he wasn't playing up to our standard at that position. He went a little rogue in terms of his positioning at times, and, he wasn't set a handful of times, and that just comes down to focus. And, if Tyler is dialed in, he's very good. If he can lose focus, he becomes average. And, we decided as a staff that we needed to change. We needed a spark. We yanked him, put in Levine.
The saves Levine made were not easy.
They weren't. I mean, and John let in as good of a coaching decision as that looks now, we were very close to that not being a very good coaching decision. So John went in, let his first two shots in. Had he let in his third, we might have gone to a different goalie, or we might have gone back to Tyler. He was able to settle in. He then rang off four or five saves in a row, a doorstep. And then, at the end of the quarter, we looked at Tyler and we said, hey, look, we're not losing faith in you. It wasn't your day. Hopefully you can go back in there with a fire lit under your butt and go back and make some saves for the team and win it for us. And he did just that. So good lesson for our program that, look, if you're not playing up to our standard, you should expect to be subbed out and the next guy in line will go in and do his job. But understand that we're not going to lose faith in you because you have one bad game or one bad quarter. So hopefully our guys get that.
So that one was 15-14 Princeton in overtime against Rutgers, and a very good win over a nationally ranked Big Ten team, regaining the Maestral Cup. And now the challenge is the Ivy opener. That is Saturday. Faceoff is 4 o'clock. The game is on ESPNU if you can't get out to Sherrod Field. So it's 4 o'clock. It's not 1 o'clock. It's a 4 o'clock start, actually 4:01 faceoff. And we will be back next week to talk about that game, and then it's on the road to Yale, Brown, and Stony Brook after that. So we'll have some things to talk about moving forward. But for now, just thanks for being with us here today.
Thank you, everyone, for the continued support.
So for Princeton head coach Matt Maddell and Jerry Price, this is the Princeton Laxcast. We're here with you each week during the lacrosse season. As the coach said, thank you for your support of Princeton men's lacrosse.